2 Kings chapter 5, as we continue our study in the life and times of Elisha. 2 Kings 5, and this story has a lot. It is loaded. We will cover verses 1 through 14 today, and then, God willing, next week, the rest of the chapter. But let's read the whole chapter to get the context. And there's several, there's a set of bookends and many connections in this chapter, beginning at verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now the Arameans had gone in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Aram said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "And now, as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me." It happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean." But Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Then his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then, when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Verse 15. When he returned to the man of God with all his company and came and stood before him, he said, "Behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant now." But he said, "As the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Naaman said, "If not, please let your servant at least be given 2 mules' load of earth, for your servant will no longer offer burnt offerings, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter." He said to him, "Go in peace." So he departed from him some distance. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, "Behold, my master has spared this Naaman the Aramean by not receiving from his hands when what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him." So Gehazi pursued Naaman. When Naaman saw one running after him, he came down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" He said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Behold, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please, give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes.'" Naaman said, "Be pleased to take two talents." And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes and gave them to two of his servants, and they carried them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and deposited them in the house. And he sent the men away, and they departed. Verse 25. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" And he said, "Your servant went nowhere." Then he said to him, "Did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever." So he went out of his presence a leper, as white as snow. Well, John and I were speaking beforehand. This story is amazing. There is much involved. There's actually 10 characters or character groups that are interacting. This could be a feature film. I mean, it's incredible, the details, the subplots, the sub-stories. And we're going to look at, of course, the main event is Naaman, and the title of the message is this: Naaman the Leper Cured by God. Of course, that's what happens. And I believe next week will be Gehazi the servant cursed by God. And it's interesting, in verse 1, it ends with "he was a leper." And verse 27 ends that "he became a leper as white as snow." So there's these two bookends that link the blessing of relieving the leper and the curse of giving leprosy. And we're amazed at inspiration, how God uses words to draw pictures and get our attention. It's fantastic. So I hope we'll see a little more of that as we move through our section. Well, beginning at verse 1, again, enter Naaman, this captain of the army of the king of Aram, which is Ben-Hadad II, we believe. And Naaman was a great man, literally before his master. He stood before his master, the king, highly respected because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. This man, Naaman, was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. So this great description, and then, "but he was a leper." Now, you may have the ESV, which has "the commander of the army." I think "captain" doesn't do it justice. We have had some captains here, which is a lower ranking officer, but "commander of the army" is probably a better, or "the general of the troops." He wasn't just, in our language, a captain. He was the commander of the army, probably the leading person in charge of the entire army, and therefore stood before the king of Aram. Or what's the other name of Aram? It's early, I know. Pardon? Syria. So Aram or Syria. So you might hear king of Syria, king of Aram. And so those are interchangeable. A little more background as we think of the king. And we'll see Ben-Hadad. But there were actually three Ben-Hadads. It's real fun. And just if you're taking notes, you want to look it up. And these dates are not 100%. It's guesstimates. The scholars have looked into it. Ben-Hadad I ruled from 900 to 860. And then Ben-Hadad II, which is, I believe, our king here of Aram, he ruled from 860 to 843. He paralleled the king of Israel, Jehoram's reign. And then Hazael, in between the second and third Hadad, who ruled from 843 to 800. And then finally Ben-Hadad III, 800 to 770. So when we read Ben-Hadad or the king of Aram, well, which one is it? The first, the second, or the third? And that's why we need to study these sections, because it can get a little bit confusing. But I believe that Ben-Hadad II is the king of Aram here. Just to go back, in 1 Kings 20, verse 1, it says, "Now Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, gathered his army, and he attacked Israel." And that was Ben-Hadad I. And then we come to later, 2 Kings 6, again we see this same king, I believe, the king of Aram, the second, maybe the third, he warred against Israel. And then in 2 Kings 13, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them continually into the hand of Hazael, king of Aram, and into the hand of Ben-Hadad, the third king, the son of Hazael. So Ben-Hadad the first, the second, Hazael, who was the usurper, and then Hadad the third. Did you get all that? I know it's difficult. If you need the notes, let me know. But it's interesting to study these kings, and they do have other names as well. So it's real fun to have a quiz and see if we have the right Ben-Hadad. But our man, Naaman, was the captain of the army, reporting to the king himself. And he has quite a resume. He's the captain. He's a great man. He's highly respected. By him, the Lord gave victory. He's a valiant warrior. This is quite an introduction for a pagan, Naaman, not an Israelite, from one of the nations that fought Israel over and over, yet he has this great resume here. What could we learn? Lesson 1 of 6. The captain's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. The captain's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. Of course, I'm thinking of Proverbs 21:1. The king's heart is like channels of water in the hands of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. This captain, this commander of the troops, this general, was appointed by God. Our text clearly states that. By him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was God's instrument. He was made a captain and commander by God, and God directed him to lead Aram to victory, and at times even against Israel. That's quite a twist. Daniel 2:21 says that God removes kings and establishes kings, or God adds captains and removes them. He adds presidents and he removes them. God is not only involved with his covenant people, he's intimately involved with anything in the world, particularly the world leaders. Psalm 75, 6 and 7, "For not from the east nor from the west, nor from the desert comes exaltation, but God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another." I was trying to find a good quote from Ecclesiastes, George, because I think there we see these same types of puzzlements, if you will, where God raises up a pagan to accomplish his work. Even here, the enemy of Israel was given success by God. And even as we read the other verse in 2 Kings 13, where God raised up Aram to go against Israel. So we could say a great man may still be a great pagan. The Bible doesn't deny that a pagan may be great, may be very successful, very intelligent, very accomplished, victorious, and yet a pagan. So I think we might tend to think, a man can't be great if he's not godly. Well, the Bible doesn't say that. You can have a greatness without godliness, which is shocking. God's ways are beyond finding out. Well, even great men can have a great disease or great weakness. Here, leprosy. And many believe that we should, and I think the ESV or the Holman Christian Standard translates it, skin disease. We think of leprosy, at least I have, that you know your arm's rotting and going to fall off. It's not necessarily the case. It could be these spots, which the Pentateuch often talks about, and even Naaman will mention this spot or place on his skin. It's some type of skin disease. So think of that as we mention leprosy in the Bible, a skin disease. Whatever it was or however bad it was, the man was miserable and he needed help, enough that he would go to Israel to get it. So he was suffering, maybe in pain, maybe deformity, the whiteness, the blotches. He had a severe case of leprosy or this skin disease. Now before we get to verse 2, notice the word before. In the NAS, if you have the center column reference or the side column, you'll notice in verses 1, 2, and 3, literally before, was before, before. And I believe there's an idea here that is helpful. Naaman was before his master, verse 1. The little girl was before Naaman's wife, verse 2. She wished that Naaman would be before Elisha, and then even Elisha, verse 16, stood before the Lord. But particularly these first three verses point to submission and authority, connecting the whole story, and we see the word master used three times as well, of the king, of Mrs. Naaman, and of the king again. And even in the second part, dealing with Gehazi, we see master and servant a few times. So there is a theme of submission, of authority, of masters and servants, which really is the glue that connects this passage. So keep that in mind as well, this idea of submission and authority. And as we see this great man, this commander of the troops, and yet we're going to find in verse 2 something quite different. Verse 2, now the Arameans had gone out in bands, marauding bands, and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel. And she waited on, or again, was before Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, verse 3, I wish that my master were with, or literally before, the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy. So we have this contrast. And again, this chapter is loaded with contrasts. The great man and this little, really insignificant girl. There's no little girls here. I had lessons for little girls. Should I save them till next week? But it's interesting in God's providence, this great contrast between Naaman the great and this captive little girl. She spoke to her mistress of someone who could cure her master, the prophet of God in Samaria. Lesson 2, tell your little girls. Even little girls can be greatly used by God. Even little girls can be greatly used by God. Smallness was turned to greatness by the hand of God. She is the linchpin in this story. Without her, he wouldn't have known about Elisha, how to get cured. And she told her mistress, the wife of Naaman. You see God's ways that are beyond finding out? He uses this little girl taken captive. It's a sad story. Were her parents dead? Was she just kidnapped and now enslaved, far from her home? Yet she had enough gumption and strength within her to say, I wish that you were before the prophet of Israel. He could help you. A little girl speaking to the great commander himself, Naaman. Remember, God is involved in all things, the tremendous and the tiny. The great Naaman to the little girl, even unnamed. Davis comments, his sway extends from parliaments and war departments to the doorknobs and phone calls of life. Our God is amazing. The parliaments and war departments to the doorknobs and phone calls. God is involved in it. And this picture of this little girl reveals that truth. So don't despise the day of small things. Maybe we feel, and we are small, yet God can do great things through weak vessels like us, even a little girl. Well, verse 4, Naaman took her advice, and he went in and told his master, saying, thus and thus spoke the girl who's from the land of Israel. Then the king of Aram said, he had his ear, he wanted to help his general. Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. Naaman departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. Jehoram is the king of Israel, and this king of Aram says, go see him, take this letter, take all this money, and I wish we had a translation like the Holman Christian Standard, 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, in today's currency, $2,406,750. This was big bucks. This king loved his general, and he wanted to help him. As a matter of fact, this money is five times the amount that Omri paid for Samaria in 1 Kings 16:24. You can look it up. This amount is five times as much. He wanted to make sure that his general was healthy, that he could lead, that he would not look deformed. So he sent all this money. Maybe he had another motive, we don't know. But that is $2,400,000 worth of gold and silver. So he reached out to the king of Israel through the official channel of communication to reach the prophet of God that the little girl had told him could offer help, would offer help. 120 miles later, Naaman arrives by chariot at Samaria. At least 120 miles. I've measured the straight line distance. I'm sure that weren't all straight lines. So several days later, he arrives in Samaria, assuming that's where they're going, where the king is located. Verse 6, he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, and now, in quotes, and now as this letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you that you may cure him of his leprosy. He had access through the official channels, his own commander, to get this letter to the king of Israel. It's not surprising. World leaders talk, but this is how it occurred at this time with this letter. And King Jehoram, we believe, responds in verse 7. He read the letter. He tore his clothes and said, am I God to kill and make alive that this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me. It's a conspiracy. Jehoram is shocked by the king's request for Naaman and tore his clothes, a sign of despair, maybe of fear. And at times, grief will see Jehoram tear his clothes when his own people became cannibals in chapter 6, verse 30. But here, it's grief. And I think he's maybe terrified. Now, his theology sounds pretty good. Am I God that I can kill and make alive? But he was a pagan, still seeking somehow to worship the true God and all his false gods. So I wouldn't take his words to be the full truth, because he was still an idolater. He misunderstood the king's request. and thought that the king had something against him, which isn't surprising because, as we noted, the Arameans and Israel were arch enemies. As a matter of fact, remember that Jehoram's father was killed by the Arameans. Remember the arrow that was pulled back and let loose and struck Jehoram? That was in a battle with the Arameans. As a matter of fact, it was this king, the king of Aram's father, whose army was fighting against Jehoram's father, Ahab. And Josephus records that it was a tradition that it was actually Naaman who was the archer. It makes a better story than truth. But maybe he was. We don't know. But it's interesting to think if he was and here he is now. But at least this was the very army who had killed his father. Jehoram's father was killed, and their armies had been fighting for decades. So of course he was afraid, and he thought, there's a quarrel against me. They're trying to get me. There's a conspiracy. There's a plan for the Arameans to attack. It's also interesting that Jehoram didn't say, I can't heal you, but I know who can. Even though Elisha had helped him in the battle with the Moabites, he had a short-term memory and forgot all about it. And he didn't say, let me call Elisha. He can help you with the leprosy. He was too afraid and terrified. He was not a man of faith. Well, thankfully, news traveled fast. Thankfully for Naaman, verse 8, it happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king saying, why have you torn your clothes? Maybe why are you afraid? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. Elisha heard about it. Word travels fast, whisper down the lane. The latest news, he had maybe an apartment near the capital. So maybe some servants are going back and forth, giving him updates. Maybe Gehazi spoke to the servants of the king of Israel. But Elisha found out, or maybe God just revealed it to him. He knew about this, and he offered his services. And he said, let him come to me. Which was really what Naaman was told to do by the little servant girl. Elisha says, let him come to me. Then he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. A true prophet, not a false prophet. The true prophet of the true God, not of the false gods like the Arameans. And the prophet is Elisha. He wants this commander to know that there is a true prophet and a true God. Lesson 3. We should seize every opportunity to promote the knowledge of God. I think Tom, as a matter of fact, I know he's going to speak about this in the next hour. Seize every opportunity to promote the knowledge of God. Of course, Elisha wants the enemies of Israel to know that there is a true prophet and there is a true God. And when we see things about the man of God, the prophet of God, it all points to God. And that's what Elisha wanted the Aramean commander to know. He wanted him to know about the true knowledge and power of the living God, not like his dead gods who couldn't heal his leprosy. Verses 9 and 10. So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. He listened, the message came, and he came back to Elisha's house. Elisha doesn't run down to greet him, but Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you shall be clean. He came with his entourage of horses and chariots and people carrying the money. He didn't travel alone. He had lieutenants and soldiers guarding him. Elisha doesn't run down and bow before him and say, what can I do for you, most great commander Naaman of Aram? He sends his servant down to him. Maybe to avoid the leprosy. I think more likely to avoid any sign of honoring this pagan. Elisha didn't want to honor. Remember, he didn't even want to speak to Jehoram, the pagan king of Israel. Surely he doesn't want to honor this pagan by flattering him, and that's what he expected. He was used to the trumpets being blown when the commander arrived and the flags came out, but not at Elisha's house. But he did tell Naaman exactly what to do. Go and wash. Many times in the miracles, this is a formula we see often. Go and do such and such. Go and do this. You need to do what God says. Go and wash in the Jordan, one of the chief waters of Israel. And wash not only once, but seven times. Was he really dirty that he needed wash seven times? No. Seven is that symbolic number all the way from Genesis 1 all through the book of the Revelation, symbolically pointing to unity, completion, perfection. You might say it's God's number. Really? It's the creative number. It's also the covenant number. But wash these seven times, the times that God told you to wash. And as a matter of fact, in Leviticus 14:7, the priest was to sprinkle the leprous person how many times with blood? Seven. And there were 7 days set aside for cleansing. It's oft repeated. We could say it's God's number. Jericho. Around Jericho. So many sevens through the Bible. And I'm sure we hear more about that in the next few weeks, the sevens of the Bible. But wash these seven times to get clean, Naaman. And the promise, your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be healed. Naaman was told by God's prophet, you'll be cured if you do what I'm telling you. Do what God says through the prophet of God. Naaman, to you, your flesh, to you personally. Lesson 4. God's sovereignty is surprising and beyond finding out. This is not a man of God. This is not a great leader in Israel. This is not one of the sons of the prophets. Yes, God helped them. He helped the wife of the son of the prophet in chapter 4. But this is Naaman, the man who killed Israelites. Why Naaman? Or why the widow at Zarephath? Or why me? Why would God have mercy on me? His sovereignty is surprising. Surprising grace. It's beyond finding out. Listen to Jesus' words, the only other mention of Elisha or Naaman in the Bible, but a significant one. Luke 4:25, Jesus said, "But I say to you in truth, there were many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the sky was shut up for 3 years and 6 months, when a great famine came over all the land, and yet Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath in the land of Sidon." Is Sidon part of Israel? Were Sidons godly? No, they were pagans. And yet God sent Elijah to this widow at Zarephath, a Gentile, to a woman who was a widow. And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, and none of them was cleansed, but only Naaman the Syrian. Remember Syrian or Aramean? God's sovereignty is surprising and beyond finding out. Why would God heal this Syrian, this Aramean? Why would he help the widow at Zarephath? These were not God's covenant people. Or we might say they were his covenant people on another level. He chose to help them because he's sovereign. God does what he pleases. And the Jews, when they heard this, They were infuriated and tried to kill Jesus. They were disgusted that God could have mercy on a Gentile because they considered Gentiles dogs. But throughout even the Old Covenant, God would save a Gentile here and there to show the Israelites that He's sovereign, that He can do what He will with whom He will. It's surprising that He rescued not only the widow at Zarephath, but Naaman the Syrian, but you and I. It's surprising grace. Why me? Because He chose to. And when people struggle with God's sovereignty in election or salvation, I think the greatest example is Israel. And God told them in Deuteronomy 7, the Lord did not set His love on you or choose you because you were anything great. It's because He chose to. Most people that reject election or predestination or salvation that is sovereign would accept that God chose Israel in the Old Covenant. They accept that part of God's sovereignty in isolation. But if they thought about it, isn't that unfair of God? If it's unfair of Him to choose one person over another, isn't it unfair that He chose Israel over Egypt? His sovereignty is surprising and beyond finding out. And praise God that He not only saved Jews, but He saved Gentiles. And of course, we revel that we were grafted in, that He has His people, a remnant according to grace. Joseph Hall, the Puritan, said, "If Israel be the worse for her nearness to Syria, Syria is better for the vicinity to Israel." What a blessing that this, via this little girl who was a captive, that this man Naaman heard about the true God and was healed, and I believe we'll see soon, really regenerated based on his confession. We'll see that momentarily. See God's sovereignty displayed in the healing of Naaman the leper. Verse 11. Naaman didn't respond well to this. He was not happy at what Elisha told him to do. But Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come down to meet me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place," literally the spot, "and cure the leper," or the skin disease. "Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. See, Naaman was not a humble man, to say the least. He became furious at what the prophet of God told him to do. It was even for his own good. He was angry. He was provoked to wrath. Proverbs 12:16, a fool's anger is known at once. In this particular situation, Naaman is a horrible leader and example. He became furious when God told him what to do. His expectations were not met. He said, "I thought it was going to go this way. I thought my plans would work out." Everything that was in his mind should have came to pass. But we never do that, do we? Yes, we do. May God help us to not have really idolatrous expectations of what we expect to happen. Well, his nationalism, thinking about these rivers, was not surprising because he was the victorious captain of the Aramean army. The waters of Israel meant nothing to him. He had recently, or who knows when, taken this girl captive. He had killed many Israelites. He probably had shed their blood in the Jordan River itself. So let me go back to my own rivers. And if you have your map ready, or your maps, mine, you can see these rivers are actually mentioned in the map of Palestine in the time of Christ, which is interesting. If you have that, but if you find Damascus, the capital of Aram or Syria, Just a little bit north, you'll see a river, and that is the Abana River. And then just south of Damascus is the Pharpar River. So those are the two rivers that Naaman refers to. And of course, the Jordan runs from way north of that lake, Semacontis, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, down through the Sea of Galilee, all the way to the Salt and the Dead Sea. So Jordan is much longer. But these rivers were delightful to Naaman, and why can't I be washed there? He was arrogant. He was proud. The rivers of Damascus and the gods of Damascus could not help Naaman, but yet somehow he was maybe holding out hope of his nationalistic rivers. They may have been better waters, but they were not the better or true God. In lesson 5, in the words of my favorite William Cooper, blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his work in vain. He was yet unbelieving. Naaman did not believe God. That's from God Moves in a Mysterious Way. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his works in vain. He was told by God, through God's prophet, what to do. Go and wash. Did he do it? He rejected it. He was arrogant. He was proud. He was still a pagan. He didn't trust in Yahweh. He only wanted someone to wave their hand and in his God's name heal him, like a magician. He went out in a rage, in fury. He was heated up in arrogance. Yet the story does not end there, and we're glad. It doesn't end with the angry and furious Naaman. Verse 13, enter his servants. They came near and spoke to him and said, my father, had the prophet told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean? These were wise servants, and they reasoned with their master. Wish we knew a little more about them, but they were ready to help their master. Just do what he said. It's not complicated. If he told you to do something complicated, you'd do it. But he just said, go wash in the Jordan 7 times. They said, do it. Well, he listens to them. Finally, he leaves all his anger and his frustration. Verse 14. So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, which is shorthand for according to what God said. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. He did what the man of God told him while all watched. His entourage was watching. First time, second time, third time, fourth time, fifth time, sixth time, seventh time, and he comes out restored. His flesh was turned back. The clock was turned back. Those old wrinkly hands and white arms and all those maybe open wounds and ulcers on his skin were gone. He had smooth, soft, and silky skin like a baby's bottom. It was like a little boy's skin. Time reversed 30, 40, 50 years. He had smooth skin. He had this messed up white leprous skin. Now it was changed to baby's skin. Lesson 6. See God's grace displayed. An angry pagan was cured by God. See God's grace displayed. An angry pagan was cured by God. In the flesh, we might have said, fine, don't go wash. There's nothing for you. Go back to Aram. Go back to your king, you pagan. We're done with you. But God was gracious. God healed this pagan commander who was just up in God's face, angry, shaking his fist. It's like Saul of Tarsus breathing out threatenings against Christ. And yet God saved him. A surprising conversion. Exalt God's grace toward this pagan Aramean. He wasn't seeking God, he was seeking healing. And yet God saved him. It seems to me he was regenerated. He was not only cleansed of his outward issues, but his inward ones. And this verse 15, as we read, he says, "Behold, now I know that there's no God in all the earth but in Israel." We don't have more information about him to see how much fruit he bore, but based on his confession, it seems, and we'll look at the next section next week, but it seems he was regenerated. He was at least cured by God and gave God the glory. Was his repentance lasting? We hope it was. We hope we meet him in heaven, a man humbled and saved and rescued by God's grace. Again, these stories magnify the grace of God. These miracles on Israelites, against God's enemies, and even upon God's enemy here, a gracious act of healing through the prophet of God, Elisha. And remember, Elisha didn't even see his face. It was all just the word through the servants. God's power is amazing. This man, who knows how long he had the skin disease, but God healed him fully. And not only healed him, but gave him the best skin that any beautiful lady would like to have. No marks, no whiteness, no scabs, no issues at all. He was healed and had restored skin. Neutrogena should take a lesson. See God's grace displayed, an angry pagan cured by God. May God encourage us as we see his wonders displayed. Just in review and then questions or comments. Lesson one, the captain's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. This was God's captain, even before he knew God. He had success in Aram because God gave it to him. Lesson two, even little girls can be used greatly by God. She was in Mrs. Naaman's house. She told her that she wished her master Naaman could be cured by Elisha. And that's how the ball got rolling, by a little girl speaking up, saying a word. Third, we should seize every opportunity to promote the knowledge of God and even the power of God, which Elisha did with Naaman the commander. Fourth, God's sovereignty is surprising and beyond finding out. One leper from Syria. There were many lepers in Israel, and none of them was healed, but only Naaman was healed by God. William Cooper's words, "Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his works in vain." Don't be like Naaman when he wouldn't believe what God said. Believe God. Trust him. Lesson six, see God's grace on display. An angry pagan was cured by God. Exalt God's grace, not only in Naaman's life, but in your own. We all had hard hearts. We were dead, leprous creatures that God caused to be born again and healed us, just like he did Naaman. May God encourage you. What questions or comments do you all have? Yes, David. I'd say he's a convoluted man because, yes, he listened to the girl, he went to ask help, he went to his enemy. I think some measure of desperation is involved, but yes, he did listen to his servants, which is a very good point. Yeah, real complex guy, as we can relate. We can be proud and humble in the same breath virtually, but you're right. Good point. Thank you. God used, Yes, God uses small things, small people to do great things. And just at a fork in the road, he uses a little tiny thing to direct us here or there. Carmen.
I think also a lesson for me is Naaman was a great man, and a lot of times great men, I mean secular and Christian, think that they have to have great attention and they will not go to the small things. That God, when he changed his heart, made him teachable. And I think it's two lessons that great leaders can learn.
Absolutely. A lot for leaders to learn from him, and absolutely. He was, I think we don't appreciate how great he was, and verse 1 clearly shows that, and God brought him a long way to humble himself. Yes. George. He was definitely a complicated man. On the one hand, humble. On the other hand, arrogant. Again, maybe in the same breath, doing both. But thankfully, he did listen. And I mean, I think there's some nationalism there where he brings up their own rivers and not Israel. And so I think it seems like, you know, hey, I can go wash in my own river to get clean. And some may think clean is just washed, but his goal is actual healing of the leprosy. But he did not want to wash in that Israel's river at all. But he finally did. Is there one more? Okay. Well, thank you. Good comments. Let's conclude our time with prayer. Lord, we thank you for your word. And we thank you that you reveal yourself in all these stories and all these miracles, that your name is exalted, that your power, that your loving kindness, that your grace, your sovereignty, your providence is what's on display. And Lord, may we read the Old Testament and even New Testament narrative, the history, from that perspective, that even pagan generals and commanders are under your control, that you can use a little girl for great good. May we all be encouraged, Lord, because we're small, and we can feel so useless at times. Lord, use us, make us to be willing servants to accomplish your will, and may we speak up about your name and your power as we have opportunity. Give us opportunity and unseal our lips. And Father, even bless Tom as he would teach and preach to us in the next hour how we would better speak of Christ and speak of your name. Lord, thank you for your word. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen.